It's a nice prelude into the show. It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews alongside Chad Ellis, our executive producer of this program. And Tony Colombo is not on the program, but he will be on the program. He's actually on vacation, but with cell service, we can reach him. And just before the show, I reached out and he sent me a picture of him on a boat. So even a bad day fishing is better than a good day at work. So we're going to check in with Tony Colombo here in just a little bit. But thank you for tuning in to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. This is a program that talks about, of course, the outdoors, but also the stories that are so prevalent in our minds right now because Second Amendment rights are so, so important. Aaron Tarlow from Southern Armory is on our first segment. And Aaron, are you working today or what are you doing? Kicking back at all?
I am going to be kind of trying to do both today. So got some guns to go look over and get ready to take them out to the range and fix them for customers. Then doing a little ordering this morning. Got about 8 or 10 AR-15s coming in. So the good news is that if you want one of those, you can call the shop and talk with Jessica and get your name on one of them. And the cool part about this, and we've actually known this company, the owner and stuff, for quite a while, and it's 100% made in America, this rifle, right down to every spring, every detent, the whole nine yards. Made right here, and a lot of it is made by them, which is
that's fantastic. And you know, Aaron, I want to point out that Southern Armory is truly a mom and pop American gun store, and it's right there in Crestwood. It is it's a great location, number one, but you guys are a mom and pop. You guys are surviving through all of this this COVID stuff that's going on, the isolation that we're all put under. And business has been cranking, as we've talked about. I do want to get right to the story of the couple that was basically the poster child for defending their homes, Mark and Patricia McCloskey. They made national headlines in late June when they took up arms to defend their home from protesters who stormed through their gated St. Louis neighborhood, had their rifle seized on Friday last week. And I'm wondering if you have any updates on that. I will tell you before you answer, 12 Republican members of Congress have written to William Barr, U.S. AG William Barr, arguing in defense of the Second Amendment rights of that couple. And I think that's fantastic they're doing that. Your thoughts on that?
Right. So, you know, first of all, I'll just go out and say there was a better way to handle that. And I've been pretty vocal on the podcast that, that, you know, avoidance is a big key, right? They could have stayed in their house and the protesters would have probably just passed by like they did with every other house. And they decided to get involved. And, you know, the photos that came out of that were not very becoming because they were, you know, pointing guns at people in the crowd with fingers on the triggers and things like that. And I think that's what has really divided the Second Amendment crowd. You got the people on one side that say, this is insane. They shouldn't have done it. And then you've got the other people that are like, great. They were defending their property. And when you look at the Missouri state law on this, you cannot defend property under, unless it's under very strict circumstances. So, this is all going to play out in the court system. It will play out and we'll just kind of have to stand by and watch. Maybe this will trigger, some reform in our current laws in Missouri. And for those of you who've been following the program for a while or have followed me on the Facebook Lives and stuff like that, you'll know that I will tell you that we are the most pro-Second Amendment state, this is my opinion, in the U.S. We beat out Texas because we have open carry and other things. But the big thing that, yeah, you can only defend property under very strict circumstances. And so with that being said, maybe this will trigger some reform in that arena so that way we don't have another prosecutor, you know, trying to maybe overstep their bounds.
Well, Aaron, I want to interject here because I do believe that the couple, the McCloskeys, were like in their backyard or barbecuing or something when the disruption to their neighborhood happened. And, you know, I think all of us can, you know, live through their eyes. And what would we do? We've all asked the question, what would I do if I saw 200 or 300 people, you know, that have just broke through a gate, that are walking through? So I think it's easy to empathize with them or try to put yourself in that kind of same position. And when I heard the audio that went along with the video of them standing out in front of their home, it seemed pretty vicious what they were saying about what they're going to do to them. They're going to do to their home and do to their dog. Even it kind of, you know, upset me. So if that was a real threat, then I don't think that they overreacted at all. But the part that really bothers me, though, is that they had the rifle seized. They couldn't get the pistol that she was carrying because it was with the attorney or something like that. But didn't it just bum you out when you heard that they seized the rifle?
So it didn't surprise me that they were going to secure the evidence and then kind of see how the case was going to play out. So if you can still carry a firearm, and it's kind of like a running, you know, joke, I guess, within smaller segments of the 2A community, you don't want to get like your nice custom $2,000 or $3,000 1911 seized. You want to buy, you know, like a throwaway gun. And if you're carrying a $3,000 1911, your throwaway gun's like a $500 Glock. And so, you know, with that being said, realize if you get into a situation like the McCloskeys, where they used a firearm to protect their property, or you used a firearm to shoot somebody and protect your own life, right? Like robbery or burglary or something. That gun is evidence, and they're going to seize that until the proceedings are done. So it didn't surprise me that it happened at all.
Probably like, because it's in the city limits too, don't you think?
No, that is going to be everywhere you go. That is going to be a nationwide deal because they're going to take that gun and hold it until they've completed the investigation. So you got to remember, they're investigating, you know, every shooting as if it was a murder, whether they survive or not. That they're going to treat that like a murder, and they're going to investigate it as if it's a murder, even though that person may recover fully. So that, yeah, the gun is going to get seized. That's not going to matter, you know, wherever it happens. It could happen in St. Louis County, could happen in Jefferson County. Now, they may take the gun, conclude the investigation within a week or two and return it, but the gun is evidence. And that is one thing that in our CCW classes we preach, like, hey, listen, your gun is going to get taken away during the investigation process, and then it will be returned to you. Now, some counties will hold that firearm and test it for the ballistics. And ballistics, I mean, like, you know, they're going to test it and they're going to look at the recovered bullets to see if there's any open cases that gun matches. Okay.
But in this case, there was no shots fired. There was no shots fired. And who actually was responsible? Did one of the protesters file a complaint, or are they the ones that got the prosecuting attorney on their side? I maybe you know that answer, because I don't. As far as I'm concerned, they stood out there to show their show of force that they are willing to defend. But then what's there to investigate? Come on, Aaron.
So, you know, well, these are good questions, Bo. And to be honest with you, when a crime is publicized, right, a potential crime, and they're getting charged with, sounds like armed criminal action. The reality is they probably should be charged under the RSMO for angry or threatening display of a weapon to one or more persons. And that, I've got that law cited in a couple places you can find. I could try to find it here real quick. I think it's like 573.030.4. It might be
563. It's probably exactly that.
right. It might be. I'm generally pretty good with numbers. But you can look up that statute, and it's a brandishing statute. And honestly, and the reason I'll go with brandishing is because they were pointing at the crowd with the finger on the trigger. It would have been, in my opinion, there would have been a non-issue if the gun would have been in a holster, right? And they were just, you know, oh, look, she's got a gun, let's stay away. Or in the husband's case, if it would have been slung and, you know, on a slung, it's attached to a sling and attached to his body, and the barrel is pointing straight up or straight down. Now, all of a sudden, now you're going to have a really hard time convincing me that there was any crime at all, because it's like the rifle's properly slung and the pistol's properly holstered, and they're just outside saying, you know, go away or we'll use force. So I think it was the so that kind of answers that question. The next part of this equation is what you asked. I'm sorry, Bo, I went blank. What was the other question you asked?
Well, just what's there to investigate? That's my main thing. Right. You know what? Let me just interject this because a lot of people made comments, you know, that they were not holding their weapons correctly, right? That the wife was, you know, holding the pistol with her finger on the trigger. And I get that. And you know what that stresses to me? That stresses that people need more training if they have firearms. And that's exactly what people can find out by coming to you at Southern Armory. So explain, what's the first step? If I own firearms, I know I'm not versed with them and in the laws, how can people get on your books to get that training that they so desperately need?
So we're experiencing basically what we're foreseeing as another shutdown because of the COVID. Is the numbers are on the rise. So we're trying to figure out a way to combat this. And then obviously, you know, it's very controversial, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, et cetera.
All right,
Right. So right now we live in really, really weird times where there's just a lot of controversy with people that are generally on the same side of a topic, but we're seeing like these little splinters, right?
Sure.
So anyway, you can get on southernarmory.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, or you can call the store. And we have a running list right now of individuals that want to take the class. So you can reach the store at 965-GUNS. That's 965-4867. And tell Jess, hey, I want to get on the list for your next CCW class. And the CCW class covers the revised statutes of Missouri, and it covers your basic ownership, right? The care of your firearm for cleaning and safe storage, ammunition selection, and then teaches you how to shoot. And then we also do private instruction, whether you want to do, you know, rifle, shotgun, pistol, it doesn't make a difference. But kind of going forward, what we're thinking is it's going to be small class sizes, and then we're going to have a scheduled range day. So you're not going to be in a classroom with 10 people all day for, you know, 8 to 10 hours. It's going to be small class sizes. We're going to chunk this off and just to limit the exposure. And then when you go to the range, we'll schedule a time with you. We're going to start utilizing our private range instead of a public range, just so not expose as many people. So a lot of details, a lot of moving parts right now. But the goal is hopefully in August, all this is cranking. And then what you'll do is you'll do the classroom portion, and then we'll have a qualification day where you'll come in and we'll say, hey, you're qualifying at 10 o'clock. And from 10 to 10:30, you're on the range, and then you're gone. And the next person comes in at 10:45.
Sure, that makes sense.
You know, and that way, we're really cutting you down, where you're just not getting exposed to as many people, because it is a concern for a lot of people. And especially,
and between, you know, now and then, between now and the time that they can get to you, maybe they can go to Missouri Firearms Coalition, because we're going to be talking with Alex Salzman on the program. But to do their homework, to find out and read the laws and read what's allowed. So you don't get in a situation like the McCloskeys. We got to wrap up the segment here, Aaron, but southernarmory.com is where you can go to find you and your firearms and your information on the CCW and everything else, right?
Right, yeah. So we're located 1 mile east of 270 and 44 at 9901 Watson Road, and right next to Harbor Freight. So if you know where that is in Crestwood, we're literally in the same plaza, just a couple of doors down. You can find us on Facebook at Southern Armory. You can listen to the podcast, Second Amendment News Podcast. We've got like 4 or 5 episodes up. You can get on our Facebook or there and tune in and listen to our live streams about working on guns or topics of legal issues. And then southernarmory.com.
Southernarmory.com.
That's southernarmory.com.
That's right. We've got more of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alex Salzman, and we are going to check in with Tony Colombo as well, all next. It's Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews. Tony Colombo on vacation, but he is going to be joining us on the program from his boat. Rich people problems. But Chad Ellis and I are holding down the fort here, and I want to thank Aaron for his inclusion on the first segment. But now we have Alex Salzman. She is from the Missouri Firearms Coalition, and I've been to their website several times. And if you've never been and you are a Second Amendment right supporter, you need to go there because you can follow what they're up to. You can donate. You can join their fight to preserve our Second Amendment rights. And Alex, welcome to the program. Hope you are doing well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yes, I am.
So the latest that I had from a couple of days ago is 12 Republican members of Congress have written to U.S. Attorney General William Barr, arguing in defense of the Second Amendment rights of the Missouri couple, Mark and Patricia McCloskey. I know you're following it. Do you have a take on where we're at on that situation for them? Because their firearms are with the police department now.
Yeah, I am incredibly saddened that all we've done to help this couple, that the only thing that they're accused of is defending their homes and their lives and livelihoods with their firearms. All we've done is tweet out some obligatory support for them. That makes me incredibly angry. I think that couple was incredibly brave. You know, they want to say, well, they didn't hold their firearms right, and, you know, they did this wrong, and they might have done that, but... You know, they weren't at a firing range. They were in the dirt, as you'd like to say. They weren't out
Absolutely.
There to get a hashtag or to snap some Instagram likes. This is what it looks like when it's real. When it's unexpected, you might end up in your front yard barefoot in a pink polo defending your wife and home. And what they have done so far to this couple and have just alienated and vilified them in the national media and then locally here at home, it makes me sick. I wish that we would enforce the rule of law instead of just, you know, trumpeting some random support on social media.
I was so sad, Alex, when I saw that their firearms, the one was seized by the police, the long gun was, and then their attorney actually turned the pistol over to the police department as well for the quote-unquote investigation. I don't know what there is to investigate because, to me, it's a done deal. No shots fired. They were just showing their show of force that if you come here, then you could be in serious trouble. And I said earlier that they are kind of the poster child for all of us that carry guns and, you know, would intend to protect our lives and our families with those said firearms, and this is the treatment that they're getting. So I'm in the same boat as you. I was just saddened by that because everybody's looking at them going, okay, is that what would happen to me? Well, the Missouri Firearms Coalition is fighting tooth and nail to preserve these rights. And where are we at today, whether it's Jeff City or on the federal level?
Well, the reason that they have not been charged so far is because in 2016 here in Missouri Firearms Coalition stood on the front lines. And what we did was we not only pushed through constitutional carry, but we strengthened the Castle Doctrine and we expanded the Stand Your Ground laws here in Missouri. That was just a few years ago. And there are people that are running for office right now that opposed those bills. There are Republicans right now that don't want those laws to be available for the McCloskeys. So what we're doing right now, Missouri, is we are doing everything we can to focus on these races. Primaries matter. We're trying to educate as many people as possible to these Republicans on the right and sometimes even on the left. I mean, we've got Clinton delegates running as Republicans here in Missouri. You know,
right.
We've got a lot of time focusing right now on making sure that Missouri gun owners know who is with us and who is against us, because it's going to be very important next session that we are only sending the best of the best, and the best gun champions that we can possibly send are the ones that we need in Jefferson City this year. Because of the McCloskeys, you saw the press conference that we just did a couple days ago, or that the governor did just a couple days ago. We absolutely need to focus here and send the best of the best to Jefferson City in August.
Well, and we got to mention that there's an election coming up August 4th, and Kim Gardner may not be able to hold on to her office. Matter of fact, I just learned earlier, I'm trying to make a connection with Mary Pat Carl, who's going to be running against Kim Gardner. Do you know her background? Is she in support of Second Amendment rights?
I don't have any idea who is running against Kim Gardner. We're focusing on Senate races and some House registers where we've got legislative policy-making decision power. Kim Gardner shouldn't be doing half the things she's doing, and I hope that the people in St. Louis are paying attention. I have no idea who her opponent is, but when you've got people having their guns confiscated for defending their property against the angry mob that the liberal prosecutor letting out of jail, I would think that you'd notice that you've got a problem. You know, that's probably why we have so much violent crime in our inner cities. There's probably a leadership problem there.
Well, yeah, that's putting it lightly. You know, and anytime I get into a conversation about this couple and it goes, you know, into different segments, you know, like you said, we're splitting hairs here. People are on one side of the Second Amendment rights and others are a little bit, you know, making fun of the couple, that kind of thing. When it comes down to it, what I always say to the people that will maybe contend with me, which, I mean, we got to have conversation to move the ball down the field. But what I always say is just picture your neighborhood and where you live, wherever that is, if it's an apartment, a condo, a house, whatever, and you have 200 to 300 people walking past your house, screaming profanities, screaming threats. What would you do, right?
After you've called the cops and they haven't come. Like, what do you do in the meantime is a question, you know, and what they did was exactly what they were supposed to do. And yes, OK, their trigger fingers could have had a little more finesse. You know, their stance wasn't perfect. But you know why? Because they're not pros. They are regular, everyday people. And they were doing everything they could to defend their home. And the reason that nothing bad happened is because they were armed. You know, we always
I believe you're right.
An armed society is a polite society. And
well, in our first segment with I'm sorry. In our first segment with Aaron Tarlow, it just stresses the fact that, you know, people made fun of how Mrs. McCloskey was holding the gun. You know what that just tells me? That just tells me we need more training. Just like, you know, they say our police officers need more training in different areas. I agree. But I also believe that, you know, there should be more training available, whether it's online or whether it's in a gun range, to make sure that if you have to go for that weapon to protect yourself, that it's second nature. That, you know, my wife is not she doesn't carry, with her very often, because it does make her nervous, but she's getting more comfortable. And I think that's the main key, is to just, you know, being around them, cleaning them on a regular basis, getting to the range so you do know what this gun is going to do and what to expect when you hear that loud noise. Because every situation, and anybody that's served in the military, Alex, you know that's how they do it. It's by repetition, you know, to make sure you're fluent with what that weapon can do.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely think that people not only need to go out and purchase a firearm, especially if you're, you know, if you're new, if you're first time and the world is just too much of a scary place and you feel like you need protection, but absolutely go out to the range, go get some training. You know, you can do a CCW class, you know, concealed carry weapons class. There are lots and lots of organizations and groups and gun shops that have those resources available, and we need to make sure that not only, you know, the new people, maybe not only the women or the younger generation, everybody needs to be trained on how to effectively defend themselves. Everybody.
And there's a lot of like-minded people. We keep seeing that the background checks keep breaking records every month because there's so many first-time gun owners out there. Listen to these words. You need to train. You need to know that weapon, and you need to know what it'll do because, you know, the world's a dangerous place. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and you've got to be prepared. And if the McCloskeys are an example or the poster child for what Second Amendment rights are about, you can look at that and be frightened because, again, their firearms have been seized by the police department. And now what do they do if danger comes to their neighborhood? Do they have other firearms? We don't know. But the thing is, they are a perfect example of what can happen and what will continue to happen, because if they get charges brought against them, it could turn out to be a tidal wave of that happening in municipalities from border to border of the state of Missouri and across the country as well. So we really need the Missouri Firearms Coalition to you know, continue this fight. And I want to encourage anybody that's listening to this and thinking, yeah, well, we need to make sure that we get the right people in Jeff City. Go to MissouriFirearmsCoalition.org. Again, you can get all their information, their latest news. Alex Salzman is leading the charge on this, and we can't thank you enough for doing that heavy lifting. But donate, join, any other suggestions you can have to make sure that people are staying on top of this. Because oftentimes people go, oh, yeah, I heard about it. I'm talking about it on the radio. No, 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 no. We need you to act now. You need to move now.
Yes. So what we have done on our social media, you can find us on Facebook, you can find us on YouTube. We've made a video for each one of the Senate races that we're concerned about. We have laid it out. We're naming names. We're showing you the records. We're showing you their survey responses. Missouri Firearms Coalition, we've got a race for just about every part of the state. You know, there's a lot of them, so we're not done making them all yet. But tune in okay. And then share those. Share those. If you know someone in Springfield, make sure you share the video. Let them know who their choices are and help us spread the word. That's the most important thing we can do right now, 3 weeks before the primary.
It's coming quick. It really is. Alex Salzman from the Missouri Firearms Coalition, thank you so much for your time. This segment brought to you by Razorback Armory. They're a full-service firearm shop that strives to be the area's premier destination for firearm enthusiasts. Find them online at RazorbackArmory.com. And a half mile east of 270 on Manchester Road, look for the tennis shop, and they're right next door to that. Seriously. I'm Bo Matthews. There is more to come on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews, and Chad Ellis, our executive producer of the program, and the vacationing Tony Colombo, one of the hardest working guys on the radio, is willing to talk on this show from his boat. And we also have my friend Brian Wortle from Stream Adventures. So we've got a lake fisherman and we've got a river or creek fisherman on the program for this segment. Tony, you're right now fishing, correct?
I want to make it official right this second when I throw this next cast that I am the first person to be on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. There it goes, while fishing on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. And I am using my gear. The lure that I have on right now is from our good friends at Bluff City Outdoors. Of course, one of the great sponsors of the show in Alton, Illinois. They are right on the Mississippi River, so they specialize in that big catfish gear. We talked about that last week with Wade Kaminsky. If you missed that show, we talked about his 112-pound catfish that he caught. He works with the guys at Bluff City all the time, so they've got the catfish guys covered, but they also have a huge selection of bass lures and crappie and everything else.
Nope, he's going in and out there, Tony. Tony, unless he fell in the water. Tony, did you fall in the water, buddy?
No, I did not. Can you hear me again? Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you.
Good. Yeah, check out our friends at BluffCityOutdoors.com. They're great guys. So, yep.
Are you catching anything? Are you catching anything? Have you caught anything?
Yeah, we've had a good. Yeah, we have. We've had a good week down here. This lake has been on fire the last few years. You know, we talked to Mike Marfell, our friend who fishes down here all the time. He's a professional. I am not. And he has talked about how this lake has just really become a boom for bass fishermen and bass tournaments and things like that. And that's the truth. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I am burned to a crisp though. So that's not good.
I bet you are. We got Brian Wortle from Stream Adventures on here. Now, Brian, you are a master at river fishing and creek fishing, but you do lake fish as well. Wouldn't it be nice if we would have been invited to be with Tony right now fishing on his boat?
That would have been great. I do love that lake. I've spent a lot of time on it, and that is a wonderful, wonderful fishery.
And, Tony, can you tell us where your honey hole is?
This was a family vacation. You guys can come next time, I promise.
Sure. Now, people know Lake of the Ozarks by the different coves and the different mile markers and stuff. Where are you at? Can you tell us?
Yeah, we're at about the 16-mile marker, not too far from where, let's see, where the toll bridge is. I can see the toll bridge from my place. So if you're familiar with that, not too far from Port Arrowhead, if you're familiar with that. So that's the part of the lake that we're in.
And are you catching mostly bass on this trip?
Yeah. Yep, that's the goal, at least. Yes.
Biggest one for the week. How big?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing too big. Maybe 2.5 pounds, 3 pounds.
It's still better than having to be at work, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes. No, this is the first. Our boss, my boss told me that I had to take these days off because I hadn't taken any days off in 2020 yet. So this has been a well-needed, fantastic week off. It's been fun.
Good for you. Brian, creek fishing, river fishing, that's your specialty. Yeah. But do you prefer lake over river, or why do you pick river?
Well, I've got a bass boat and I have a jet boat. And then I've got a bunch of smaller crafts, inflatable pontoon boats and canoes and such, and waders. So as long as I've got a fishing pole in my hand, I'm pretty content. But there's certain times this time of the year, I got to tell you, when you're waist deep in water, that's in the late 70s, early 80 degrees, it doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees outside.
You got that right.
You can find some shade in the stream. And what's really cool is this time of the year, the water's low. So those fish are pretty concentrated in specific areas. So you can really go out and have some good times.
I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a quick question for you. So I fish, when I do fish in the rivers around, Missouri and Illinois, I'm usually fishing for smallmouth bass, and smallmouth bass, especially that live in the river because they're constantly fighting the current, are some of the most fun fight that you'll get out of any fish. Just an absolute blast. What kind of fish do you specialize in, or are you indiscriminate when it comes to your fishing? And what are some of those rivers around the, like, we've been going down to Jack's Fork for a very long time. My family has, and I love fishing down there, but what are some of the rivers that people may not know about that are kind of around the Missouri area that want to be, the guys that are looking to find new places to fish could go check out?
Well, around the St. Louis area, my three favorites within an hour drive are the Big River, the Merrimack River, and the Burbitts can be very fun. And then the next level out a little further, the St. Francis River is incredible. But smallmouth you're looking for that trophy smallmouth, but I've never heard anybody complain about a nice largemouth or even spotted bass. All of the fish in the river, they're like aerobics instructors. They are constantly moving. So pound for pound, they're just strong. And they generally jump more in the river. They can't really dig too deep. So you get some really cool aerobatics when you're fighting them in. And then there's still, you can't discount, there's some great crappie in the rivers. I've caught quite a few walleye in the Merrimack River. And just a couple weeks ago, I was fishing the lower Merrimack, and a friend of mine and I, we caught 100 white bass in about 3 hours.
Wow.
Wow.
And then we had some pretty good hybrid striped bass mixed in there.
So the temperatures that they are right now, Brian, the temperatures are up, people are out floating, for recreational, get a suntan and just get away from staring at the same four walls with our isolation that we're all in right now. What river do you prefer, or do you think is the least likely to be floated on by partiers so you can fish, or do you not mind the floaters going by?
Every year I always get together with some friends and we do one of the adult floats, and most people understand what the adult float is. You're out on the river with 10,000 of your closest friends, and you can almost walk from craft to craft, and I have always got a fishing pole in my hand, and everybody on the float will always say, I can't believe you're catching fish with all these people in the water. Well, in the summer, every weekend, the river is like that. That's normal. Right. So the fish don't care. They still have to eat. And I've actually caught them like right up against other people. They'll be, you know, at somebody's feet. And it's really kind of fun. But, and then you've got an audience, which makes it even more fun.
Right. And well, and you got something to look at too.
And that doesn't hurt. Pig here.
So Tony, I want to ask you both your opinion on this because I've been on a Stream Adventures trip with Brian before on the Big River and we had a great time. But do you believe that playing music, over your phone or your Bluetooth speaker or whatever, do you think that, it affects your fishing good or bad?
Neither. I think it's an old wives' tale that you're going to scare the fish if you talk.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a good way to, you know, it's a good way to keep your kids quiet if you're fishing with them and you are trying to concentrate. But other than that, I don't believe. Right. Other than that, no, I don't think that the noise hurts your fishing. I think that for me, one of the best things about going fishing with friends, because, you know, it's something that I don't get to do nearly as much as I'd like to. You know, it's a good time to be out, not just on the water fishing, but catching up with friends and telling stories and talking. So for me, the hanging out with people is just as much a part of it as the actual fishing is. So we're talking. I'm not a big, like, play music guy when I'm fishing, but I don't think that would really affect it that much. I don't know that it attracts them, but I also don't think that it scares them away. But Brian's a professional. I'd love to get his thoughts on that.
I've seen it both directions. I've actually stomped on the bottom of the boat and had fish come to me. And I've also had clients that just set their rod down on the bottom of the boat, and I'll watch fish scatter. So I think it depends on whether or not they're in an aggressive feeding mode. Sometimes noise will attract them if they're looking for food. But if they're kind of in that dormant mode where you got to bump them in the nose to get them to eat, then I've belly crawled through the weeds to clear stream deep holes to catch smallmouth. Because just even standing up would make them scatter. So it really just depends on where you're at, what type of environment it is, what the conditions are, and, like I said, whether the fish are actively looking for food. Tony, you might even have this on your boat. I don't know if you've got there's some machines that actually make noise that are supposed to. I think it's called the Hydro Wave. And there's a lot of professionals use that to get fish to get into the feeding mode. I've never used one myself.
No, I don't have that. That's for rich people like Bo Matthews. I can't afford that stuff.
I don't even own a boat, man. Don't even start.
But I believe it that, I could definitely, I could definitely see that equipment working. So that doesn't surprise me. The technology is just amazing how far it's come in the last couple of decades.
And a lot of the artificial baits are designed to make noise. And I've actually got some lures that have batteries in them that when they touch water, they make little clicking sounds. And I've had that work. I literally just put it in the water and let it sit on the surface and eat it. You don't even have to move it.
Kids, if you're listening to the program, if your grandfather or your father or your mother say, be quiet, the fish are going to be scared away, it's not true at all.
Nah,
we've confirmed this.
They're full of crap.
It's just a tactic. Well, Tony Colombo is at the Lake of the Ozarks. We got Brian. You're not fishing right now, are you, Brian?
No, I'm doing my daytime job today. Doing some custom work, but I will be, I might even be able to get out on a stream this afternoon. That's my goal.
Okay, well, we're going to keep both of these guys on the line while we've got the technology in for the podcast exclusive, and we'll talk a little bit more about the differences between river fishing, creek fishing, and lake fishing, like Tony is on his fancy yacht this time of the vacation. So stick around for that, but that is going to do it for Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I'll see you on the podcast exclusive.
Oh, thanks for having me, Bo.
See you, boys.
Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews, and Chad Ellis, our executive producer of the program, and the vacationing Tony Colombo, one of the hardest working guys on the radio, is willing to talk on this show from his boat. And we also have my friend Brian Wortle from Stream Adventures. So we've got a lake fisherman and we've got a river or creek fisherman on the program for this segment. Tony, you're right now fishing, correct?
I want to make it official right this second when I throw this next cast that I am the first person to be on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. There it goes, while fishing. On Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. And I am using my gear. The lure that I have on right now is from our good friends at Bluff City Outdoors. Of course, one of the great sponsors of the show in Alton, Illinois. They are right on the Mississippi River, so they specialize in that big catfish gear. We talked about that last week with Wade Kaminsky. If you missed that show, we talked about his 112-pound catfish that he caught. He works with the guys at Bluff City all the time, so they've got the catfish guys covered, but they also have a huge selection of bass lures and crappie and everything else.
Oh, he's going in and out there. Tony, Tony, unless he fell in the water. Tony, did you fall in the water, buddy?
No, I did not. Can you hear me again? Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you.
Good. Yeah. Check out our friends at BluffCityOutdoors.com. They're great guys. So, yep.
Are you catching anything?
Yeah,
have you caught anything?
Yeah, we've had a good. Yeah, we have. We've had a good week down here. This lake has been on fire the last few years. You know, we talked to Mike Marfell, our friend who fishes down here all the time. He's a professional. I am not. And he has talked about how this lake has just really become a boom for bass fishermen and bass tournaments and things like that. And that's the truth. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I am burned to a crisp though. So that's not good.
I bet you are. We got Brian Wortle from Stream Adventures on here. Now, Brian, you are a master at river fishing and creek fishing, but you do lake fish as well. Wouldn't it be nice if we would have been invited to be with Tony right now fishing on his boat?
That would have been great. I do love that lake. I've spent a lot of time on it, and that is a wonderful, wonderful fishery.
And, Tony, can you tell us where your honey hole is?
This was a family vacation. You guys can come next time, I promise.
Sure. Now, people know Lake of the Ozarks by the different coves and the different mile markers and stuff. Where are you at? Can you tell us?
We're at about the 16-mile marker, not too far from where the toll bridge is. I can see the toll bridge from my place, so if you're familiar with that. Not too far from Port Arrowhead, if you're familiar with that. So that's the part of the lake that we're in.
And are you catching mostly bass on this trip?
Yeah. Yep. That's the goal, at least. Yes.
Biggest one for the week. How big?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing too big. Maybe 2.5 pounds, 3 pounds.
It's still better than having to be at work, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. No, this is the first, my boss told me that I had to take these days off because I hadn't taken any days off in 2020 yet. So, this has been a well-needed, fantastic, week off. It's been fun.
Good for you, Brian. Creek fishing, river fishing, that's your specialty. But do you prefer lake over river, or why do you pick river?
Well, I do have, I've got a bass boat and I have a jet boat. And then I've got a bunch of smaller crafts, inflatable pontoon boats and canoes and such, and waders. So I, as long as I've got a fishing pole in my hand, I'm pretty content. But there's certain times of the this time of the year, I got to tell you, when you're waist deep in water, that's, you know, that's in the late 70s, early 80 degrees, it doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees outside.
You got that
so
right.
You can find some shade in the, you can find shade in the stream. And what's really cool is this time of the year, the water's low. So those fish are pretty concentrated in specific areas. So you can really go out and have some good time. You know, there's so just less water for,
I have a quick question for you.
To be in. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a quick question for you. So I fish, when I do fish in the rivers around, you know, Missouri and Illinois, I'm usually fishing for smallmouth bass, and smallmouth bass, especially that live in the river because they're, you know, they're constantly fighting the current, are some of the most fun fight that you'll get out of any fish. Just an absolute blast. What kind of fish do you specialize in? Or are you indiscriminate when it comes to your fishing? And what are some of the rivers around the, like, we've been going down to Jack's Fork for a very long time. My family has, and I love fishing down there. But what are some of the rivers that people may not know about that are kind of around the Missouri area that want to be, you know, the guys that are looking to find new places to fish could go check out?
Well, around the St. Louis area, my three favorites within an hour drive are the Big River, the Merrimack River, and the Burbitts can be very fun. And then the next level out a little further, the St. Francis River is incredible. But smallmouth you're looking for that trophy smallmouth, but I've never heard anybody complain about a nice largemouth or even spotted bass. You know, all of the fish in the river, they're like aerobics instructors. They are constantly moving. So pound for pound, they're just strong. And they generally jump more in the river. You know, they can't really dig too deep. So you get some really cool aerobatics when you're fighting them in. And then there's still, you can't discount, there's some great crappie in the rivers. I've caught quite a few walleye in the Merrimack River. And just a couple weeks ago, I was fishing the lower Merrimack, and a friend of mine and I, we caught 100 white bass in about 3 hours.
Wow.
Wow.
And then we had some pretty good hybrid striped bass mixed in there.
So the temperatures that they are right now, Brian, you know, the temperatures are up, people are out floating, you know, for recreational, you know, get a suntan and just get, you know, get away from staring at the same four walls with our isolation that we're all in right now. What river do you prefer or do you think is the least likely to be floated on by partiers so you can fish, or do you not mind the floaters going by?
You know, every year I always get together with some friends and we do one of the adult floats. And most people understand what the adult float is. You're out on the river with 10,000 of your closest friends. And, you know, you can almost walk from craft to craft. And I have always got a fishing pole in my hand. And everybody on the float will always say, I can't believe you're catching fish with all these people in the water. Well, in the summer, every weekend, the river is like that. That's normal. Right. So the fish don't care. They still have to eat. And I've actually caught them, like, right up against other people. They'll be, you know, at somebody's feet. and it's really kind of fun. But and then you've got an audience, which makes it even more fun.
Right. And well, and you got something to look at, too. But
well, and
not
that doesn't
to be
hurt.
A pig here. So, Tony, I want to ask you both your opinion on this, because I've been on a Stream Adventures trip with Brian before on the Big River, and we had a great time. But do you believe that playing music over your phone or your Bluetooth speaker or whatever, do you think that, you know, it affects your fishing, good or bad?
Neither. I think it's an old wives' tale that you're going to scare the fish if you talk.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a good way to, you know, it's a good way to keep your kids quiet if you're fishing with them and you know, are trying to concentrate. But other than that,
I
don't believe. Right. Other than that, no, I don't think that the noise hurts your fishing. I think that for me, one of the best things about going fishing with friends because, you know, it's something that I don't get to do nearly as much as I'd like to. You know, it's a good time to be out, not just on the water fishing, but catching up with friends and you know, and telling stories and talking. So for me, the hanging out with people is just as much a part of it as the actual fishing is. So we're talking. We don't, you know, I'm not a big, like, play music guy when I'm fishing, but I don't think that would really affect it that much. I don't know that it attracts them, but I also don't think that it scares them away. But Brian's a professional. I'd love to get his thoughts on that.
I've seen it both directions. I've actually stomped on the bottom of the boat and had fish come to me. And I've also this is no joke, I've had clients that just set their rod down on the bottom of the boat, and I watch fish scatter. So I think it depends on whether or not they're in an aggressive feeding mode. Sometimes noise will attract them if they're looking for food. But if they're kind of in that dormant mode where you got to bump them in the nose to get them to eat, then I've belly crawled through the weeds to clear stream deep holes to catch smallmouth. Because just even standing up would make them scatter. So it really just depends on where you're at, what type of environment it is, what the conditions are, and, like I said, whether the fish are actively looking for food. Tony, you might even have this on your boat. I don't know if you've got there's some machines that actually make noise that are supposed to. I think it's called the hydrowave. And there's a lot of professionals use that to get fish to get into the feeding mode. I've never used one myself.
No, I don't have that. That's for rich people like Bo Matthews. I can't afford that stuff.
I don't even own a boat, man. Don't even start.
But I believe it. I could definitely see that equipment. That equipment working, so that doesn't surprise me. The technology is just amazing how far it's come in the last couple of decades.
And a lot of the artificial baits are designed to make noise. And I've actually got some lures that have batteries in them that when they touch water, they make little clicking sounds. And I've had that work. I literally just put it in the water and let it sit on the surface and a fish will eat it. You know, you don't even have to move it.
Okay, so kids, if you're listening to the program, if your grandfather or your father or your mother say, "Be quiet, the fish are going to be scared away," it's not true at all.
Nah,
we've confirmed this. It's just a tactic. Well, Tony Colombo is at the Lake of the Ozarks. We got Brian. You're not fishing right now, are you, Brian?
No, I'm doing my daytime job today. Doing some custom work, but I will be. I might even be able to get out on a stream this afternoon. That's my goal.
Okay, well, we're going to keep both of these guys on the line while we've got the technology in for the podcast exclusive, and we'll talk a little bit more about the differences between river fishing, creek fishing, and lake fishing, like Tony is on his fancy yacht this time of the vacation. So stick around for that, but that is going to do it for Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I'll see you on the podcast exclusive.
Oh, thanks for having me, Bo.
See you, boys. Buddy.